The content of this program is meant for educational purposes only, because knowledge is power. However, the controversial subject matter discussed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, staff, or its advertisers. Change only happens when we, the people, become part of the solution. That's why more and more patriotic Americans are tuning in to the Power Hour. Now, here's your host, Dave Krieger.
And it's 12 noon, our time here on the Power Hour. Welcome back. And, of course, the phone lines are open at 844-769-2944. I don't want to actually read the book to you on the air that I was just talking about here. This is called Against Your Better Judgment, The Hidden History of How the U.S. Was Used to Create Israel. See, before, it was Palestine. And if you visit ifamericansknew.org, ifamericansknew.org, one of the things that I noticed on there was a map of Palestine, the way it started. And it shrunk, and it shrunk, and it shrunk over time. And now there, you got the little bit of Gaza in there, plus some pockets. That's why we asked Allison Weir to come on the show, that and Phil in Florida and others, really wanted to get a different take on somebody that's actually done the research and the history into this thing. And I guess, you know, besides asking Allison Weir, how did this whole thing start? Because, I mean, you pretty much explained in the first part of the book. Is it still the Zionist mentality to make all the people who support their cause move to Israel once they, I mean, it looks like what they're trying to do is drive all the Palestinians out completely, whether they kill them all, run them off, whatever. They want to take over their land, which it looks like they've been doing from what you discussed in your book. But I mean, their ultimate goal is to basically kill off every Palestinian. And I mean, they were there first, right?
They were. They've been there for, you know, millennia, for centuries. And the thing to remember is that for centuries, there was no violence there, no sectarian violence. There were Jews, Christians, Muslims, all living together. There are, you know, churches, mosques, synagogues that have been there for, you know, a great deal of time. I talked to a lot of older Palestinians when on trips there and around the country here. And I said, did you have any Jewish friends? Did you know any Jews when you were there in the, you know, 40s? Because these are some, you know, very elderly people. And pretty much always they've said, oh, sure, you know, we had neighbors. We helped each other out. So there was what caused the conflict and the violence that we're seeing now was a political ideology promoted by elites. As you know, that's how it often is on many things, that promoted an ideology to dispossess the people in that area that were not Jewish and to bring in many more Jewish people, because originally it was 95% non-Jewish. The majority population was largely Muslim, about 80%, about 15% Christian, and then the rest were Jewish Israelis who were not Zionists. They actually, the people there, the Jewish population of Israel, actually opposed Zionism as well. They knew it would cause enormous problems, as it has done. Today, there is, what I hadn't realized for a while, I was reluctant to believe this when somebody mentioned it to me, but then my research, I found that Zionism consisted of two things. One was to push out the Palestinians, the people that were living there. And the other thing, this was the part that I took a while to learn this too, was to have an ingathering of all Jews around the world. That was, you know, that's the terminology they would use. In gathering, and they tried to propagandize and sometimes use methods of almost coercion to get Jews from different parts of the world to go there. And at first, very few wanted to do that. And of the ones that went there, a number would get there and say, wait, this is we're committing a deep wrong here. I don't agree with this. And they left. A lot of them left. So there were, you know, that's still, now there's still the effort, an increasing effort, really, in Gaza and in the West Bank. There's been, you know, massive violence against Palestinians in the West Bank as well, Ramallah, Bethlehem, etc., Nablus, Jenin, to get rid of as many as possible using violent means to, you know, in Gaza, they were hoping, clearly a number of people have written about this, that they really wanted to get to have another Nakba, as it's called, a catastrophe, when they would ethnically cleanse Gaza. Egypt, on the other hand, did not want a lot of people from Gaza suddenly overwhelming Egypt. So Egypt, you know, actually has tried to prevent that. But now Israel has taken control of that border, so who knows what will happen. But clearly the effort has been to get rid of the people of Gaza, one way or another.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was alluding to. It is a depopulation effort by the Zionist movement over there. And I mean, Menachem Begin, Yitzhak Rabin, all of these people, the names are in the book. You've done your homework adequately, Allison Weir, I can tell just by looking at the footnotes. And the fact that you've actually been there and talked to people, that adds a ton of credibility to what's going on here. Let's go to the phones and take some calls, if we could. Sherry in Kansas, you're first up. I know you've spoken about this before. Allison Weir is on the show. Go ahead.
Hello, Allison. I've read that Meyer Lansky helped a lot initially in for the formation of Israel, and that he was even supplying arms to the new settlers. Did you find out anything about that?
I did, and I don't believe I wrote about it in my book, because my book the intent was to keep it short and readable. But yes, you're right that Meyer Lansky, who was, you know, the organized crime boss, did support Zionism, as did a lot of people in the Jewish portion of the mafia. You know, had been propagandized, and so they too were helping Israel and supplying weapons to them. You're correct.
I understand, because of his reputation, they did want him actually moving there. Isn't that correct?
That's right. So a lot of these things were done behind the scenes.
Yeah, see, I mean, but that was part of what they did. They wanted all the people, the like-minded people that thought like them, especially those that thought like them, to repopulate the area that they are now trying to ethnically cleanse. I mean, that's still their motive, right?
Yes, but you're right. That's been a major part of it, and they're very ruthless, the Zionists, mm-hmm. then and now. And not every, I'm sorry to use the term Zionist, but not every Israel partisan is as bad as some of them are.
Yeah.
Them are definitely endorse amazing cruelty. It's just astounding. Some are softer. They'd like to think that they don't support the violence, but they want Israel to do what it's doing because it supposedly has to, which is not true.
But see, the propaganda is they're really after Hamas, which is another faction of the Arab culture that doesn't like what's going on. Hamas probably realizes what these Zionists are doing. I don't know how vocal they've been about it, because I really, until I got this book and was able to sit down, I don't want to say a whole lot of stuff I don't know anything about. So, because that makes me look like the idiot, and that's not the way we're supposed to be. As a show host, I'm supposed to be neutral here. But the thing is that I've got to give everybody their say. But when I get a book like this and I can actually sit down and read and look at footnotes and see how history enveloped the United States and how they basically used us to get what they want, I mean, people should be incensed. Here, they should be incensed.
I agree. There are many, I think many patriots, you know, strong, hardcore American patriots are really outraged at what's going on now and what has gone on in the past, manipulation of our country in many important ways, taking our money from people, you know, taxpayers work hard for that money that we pay. You know, I just did my taxes again a while ago. And, you know, the fact that the billions and billions of our taxes are going to a country that's quite wealthy, where, you know, people brag about how much better they're doing than Americans. Sometimes you'll see articles about that. And yet they're taking our taxes. And not only is that bad, but they're using them in ways that are completely unacceptable and antithetical to the principles that I believe our country was founded on.
Correct. Chance in West Virginia. Good afternoon. You're on with Allison Weir. Go ahead. What's your question?
Yes. Hello, Dave Meister. Hello, Mrs. Weir. Excellent program.
Hello.
I have one question for Mrs. Weir. Now, most people are becoming aware of the Zionist influence on American politics, especially since 1940s, right? But I'd like to know, how far does the Zionist influence go back on to influence American politics and presidents? I've read that Judah Benjamin, during the administration of Presidents Lincoln and Lincoln, had an enormous influence back then. So does Zionist influence on American politics and presidents go back that far, in your opinion?
I don't know. My book focuses on the foundation of Israel, and that particular influence began in the late 1800s. The Zionist movement was begun at that time. There were conferences in Switzerland that Americans went to. There were conferences starting in about that time in the United States. The number of Zionists in the United States by 1920 was about 200,000. And by the 1940s, it was about 1 million. So it was becoming an important movement that was already influencing people in Congress by the 1920s. But it went back definitely to the late 1800s and was becoming very significant by the early 1900s.
That's why I brought up Judah Benjamin. It was in the 1860s or so. I was just curious if their influence on American presidents goes back that far. That was my only question. Thank you for taking my call now.
I appreciate it, Chance. Thanks for your call. Brady in Vegas, you have a question.
Yeah, I saw that Biden was actually exposing himself about a year ago as being a number one Zionist. He was proud to say he was. Also, Donald Trump, he's a Zionist. Kennedy, everybody on that platform right now is a Jew Zionist. So you have to go down and you look like, if you go into Israel today and you open up your Bible and you read it, you'll be thrown in jail. Just like if you go into Canada today and you say Christ is King, you'll be also thrown in jail.
Okay, so your question?
My question is, what do you feel about now that the 2,000-pound bombs that were going to Bibi Netanyahu, 2,000 of them were blocked because of the protesters. I find it absolutely asinine that our government bows down to a bunch of college students, but it's kind of funny.
I don't know, you know, Brady, thanks for your call. My conflict with that is that here you have Lloyd Austin on camera telling Congress that, you know, we're assessing the situation in Rafah. We want to know, you know, we're really hesitant about sending these weapons that Brady was talking about over there because we're afraid they're going to use them to virtually turn all of Rafah into an empty pit, you know, and that's kind of where he's going with this. I know that there's been political comments about Biden catering to the protesters by holding back on the weapons. Now he's talking about bringing Gazans over here, the refugees. I really don't think the Gazans want to come here. What's your take on all this, Allison Weir?
I agree. Gazans want to stay where they are. That's their home. They, you know, they have long, long connections to that land,
yeah.
Just like we wouldn't want suddenly leave. You know, their connections are longer than most of ours to this country. Truthfully, because our country started, you know, long after Palestine was already there. So, no, they don't want to do that. They want to be able to stay. And in terms of Biden and Trump, John Mearsheimer is a very prominent international relations expert and political scientist and author, very respected, really quite brilliant man. And he has been recently speaking on this issue quite a bit. He has been writing about it for a number of years. And he said that the reason that Biden will not stop the genocide is because of the Israel lobby. The Israel lobby is largely what drives both parties. I personally don't think that Trump is a Zionist, but I think that, you know, like other politicians, He's fully aware of the power of the Israel lobby and the billionaires that will fund you or not fund you or destroy you or not destroy you, depending on your stand on Israel. I think that's really, there are some people that I think are hardcore Zionists, that are Israel partisans lifelong. I don't think either of them is a lifelong Zionist. Now, Biden himself has said he's, you know, a number of years ago, he said he's a Zionist. So in his case, it might be closer to true. I don't quite see that for Donald Trump, but I'm not an expert on either one of them.
Sure. And I understand that because I know that your history and your focus has been on the book and the website of AmericansNew.org. The whole idea was to get the historical perspective out so that people could understand, you know, the parameters and everything, you know, how they started, what they did, how they funded it. The fact that, you know, what they were trying to do with what they call DPs or displaced persons. I mean, they got some of these out of the camps, didn't they?
That was, I think, so much of what I discovered was shocking. Wow. That was one of the big ones. And I'm glad you brought that up. Most people don't even get to that.
Oh, I got to it. Trust me. When I read that, I'm like, oh, where did she get this from? That's one of the things I had to go to the footnotes for. Wow.
That's right. And then you see many of my sources are from Israeli sources. You know, they're from, you know, they're not from quote anti-Semites at all. I don't quote from anybody that would be considered anti-Semitic that I can think of. Now, this was very shocking because what many people don't know is that the Zionists, this was even before Israel was created, they had decided there was a worldwide draft for all Jews around the world were going to be drafted. They had to go and fight in this, they call it the War of Independence. It was actually a war of ethnic cleansing. So they're trying to say, okay, everybody has to come here. Well, American Jews didn't have to go and didn't go. No. Same for Europeans. But they had these poor people in displaced persons camp, you know, they'd been held by the Nazis. They were very weak and vulnerable. And so the Zionists were very active in those camps. They would beat them up. They would cut off their rations. This is all documented. And then some of them would, you know, wanted to come to the United States. And instead they'd go to Israel, and there they'd have to fight in this war that they had nothing to do with, that they didn't endorse.
And many of them got killed.
One of the cruelest, and many got killed.
Yeah,
that's right.
Wow, that's one of the things that shocked me when I had to go to the footnote for that one. Oh, you see, I mean, this book is really interesting, even though it's only 93 pages. It's just chock full of 300 plus footnotes in there that attribute it to a source, which is a good thing because a lot of journalists these days don't want to talk about their sources for obvious reasons. But Esther in Washington, you're on with Allison Weir. Go ahead.
Thank you, Allison, for sharing all this wonderful information. I have a question, and the reason for my question, well, the question is, did not Zionism, members of the Zionist movement, which essentially were Jews that had a lot of money, did they not fund and give large amounts of persuasive funding to both sides of the war?
World War One and basically my book doesn't go into World War Two, so don't really address that.
Well,
but
in terms of World War One,
what they did was it wasn't the money at that point that I can see that was the decisive factor. It was for the, you know, this was, it played a part probably in Wilson, but mainly what happened is that the Zionists in England, especially Chaim Weizmann, went to the British government, which was in the middle of trying to fight this war that they were losing. They had huge casualties in World War One, especially in, you know, the beginning years. So they were losing that war, and they wanted the U.S. to come in on their side, of course, as did the Germans want us to come in on their side. Americans were, quote, isolationists and didn't want to join a war that had nothing to do with them. Massive carnage, a pointless, unnecessary war. So Americans wisely did not want to go into the war. But the Zionists in Britain went to the British government and said, through our our Zionist colleagues in the United States, especially Louis Brandeis and some others. We have close connections to Woodrow Wilson, and we will work to push the U.S. to join the war on the side of Britain if you promise us that you will then facilitate our effort to colonize Palestine once you win the war and become and then are in charge of the Middle East, because this was the war was also against the Ottoman Empire. We always just think of Germany. So they used their political influence rather than their money at that point. That was the major factor.
Yeah, there's an understanding that they also influenced the German army in World War II. But that would be a deep dive in research to find out all the actual proof of that. And the Zionists are atheists. They do not believe in Judaism. They do not believe in Christianity. They do not believe in a creator. They essentially believe in themselves. And right now with the situation, what do you know of the like the four main branches of the Orthodox Jews and also the Messianic Jews that are literally supporting the Zionist government there because of land issues and where they need to place the new temple and to do their sacrifices with the red calf. And I think if you were to look into that, when you find religious fervor in supporting genocide, this leads to an atrocities that they're literally blind to because of their beliefs. Could you comment on that?
Thank you for your call, Esther.
You're welcome.
Sure, somewhat. I looked into this a bit. You're correct that the early Zionist leaders were almost all atheists or agnostics. In fact, observant Jews at that time opposed Zionism for religious grounds, that this was against God's will. This is not the way they were supposed to go to the Holy Land. So this was not at all a religious movement at the beginning. Eventually, they got some rabbis to join their cause, and then they started to push it as a religious aspect, too. Today, there are fundamentalist Jewish Israelis who are fervently pro-Zionism. Very violent, very extreme, very... their statements are really, truly appalling and shocking. And so that's where a lot of the right-wing support for Israel comes from that community, sadly, which is very different from the way it had been originally. But there are... fundamentalist Jewish people. There's one group called Naturai Karta that's specifically anti-Zionist, who's more, they have stuck to the original. They say they are based on the Torah, not the Talmud so much, which the others are on. And they specifically don't recognize Israel. They are opposed to it. A lot of demonstrations around the United States will often have members there. I expect they're at these college demonstrations, although I don't know that, but I would expect they're probably there also, because they are fervently anti-Zionists and say it does not represent Judaism. That it is in fact, they say, heretical. So there are both of those strains.
I just wonder why, instead of doing this on the college campuses, why they just didn't en masse go to Washington, D.C., where all this funding for Israel and this supposed Israel war and independence is coming from. I mean, they're taking our tax dollars, yet they're not doing what they did on January 6th and going and marching on the Capitol and demanding Congress stop funding this atrocity that that we're all calling about. So the thing is that your book stops there, but see, AIPAC is still around. AIPAC is still influencing Washington, D.C. and continues to do so. In your opinion, is AIPAC pretty much Zionist?
Absolutely. And it's not the only one. If you go to our website, you'll see we have a list of the Israel lobby. And it's there are hundreds of organizations.
Wow.
You know, it's the most pervasive and powerful lobby, I feel, in this country. Now, we know lobbies are the way things work. Usually there's a lobby on both sides of an issue, and hopefully at times we get decent policies out of that, some sort of balance. In this case, there's nothing that approaches that on the other side. So you've got this massively powerful Israel lobby in the United States. AIPAC is very powerful in Congress. The Anti-Defamation League that the media always talk as though it's some sort of official, reliable, trustworthy agency.
Yeah.
It's the
ADL.
Opposite, as
yeah.
you know, some of you may know. So the ADL is,
yeah.
is Zionist.
Jewish Defense League. And, I mean, but see, these guys control the media, though. They control the speech, and that's the next thing I want. There's two things I've got to cover before we adjourn for this. One of them is the control that they're now having over people that every time they throw this anti-Semitic label out there, that's really not an appropriate label. What they're really saying is, look, we know who you are. We know what you're doing here. We know what you've done in the past, and we don't like what you think you're going to get away with in the future, and we want to do something about it. That's the reason that you've got all these media backstops out there running interference, like the Jewish Defense League and Anti-Defamation League and places like that. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, certainly they're weaponizing, as the trendy term now is, the term anti-Semitism to, very, very offensive, very damaging to somebody's career, potentially destroys your career if you're called anti-Semitic. And that's what they're doing. They're basically, these are very powerful bullies. The ADL is a powerful bully. AIPAC is the same. There are other groups around the country that are just the same. So the people in Congress know I have to do what they tell me or I'll lose the next election, which has often happened. Not always happened, but very often happened. So they, people lose their jobs over this. There are people that some of these billionaires who fund Israel, there are many billionaires, you can look at our list, who fund it, will then, maneuver to say, okay, these students, you're not going to get a job when you graduate. It's pretty courageous for many of these students to do what they're doing, and I hope they don't pay badly for what they're doing. Some of them, are getting injured, but they're endangering their careers to a degree. Let's hope not. Let's hope other companies will value that they were patriotic, principled people. Every demonstration has a mixture. Mm-hmm. Certainly there's some wild cards in every demonstration. But overall, it's clear that the large number of these students are principled and are doing what many people that know about the issue feel is actually an appropriate thing to do.
Right.
Whether it's the best tactic, who knows? But they're on campuses. Their campuses often have endowments in which a lot of the money is in Israeli companies or companies that support Israel. So I think the feeling is that they're on that campus, they can address their own campus, their own university, and that's appropriate. That's their tuition money in some cases.
Wow.
So it's appropriate to decide that you don't like the way your money's being used.
But the thing is that the pro-Hamas, anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian, whatever the case, anti-Zionist, pro-Zionist, they're all labels the media has been throwing around trying to keep us divisive. That would be a fair statement, right?
That's completely a fair statement. Divide and conquer. Divide,
yeah.
Divide, divide.
All right. Now, speaking of which, this is my last question here because we've got a minute left. Where do we stand as far as our foreign policy goes? Because now the Arab community is very upset with us and they're screaming death to America, death to the infidel. Do you think, you really believe because of our stance that they will follow through with that?
This is very, very damaging to our country. It's very damaging to us. When people see that we're the ones that are, they're seeing these atrocities, and then they know that the U.S. government is funding it to a great deal. They're using our weapons.
This is not a pretty picture.
We need to say it's not, this is not Americans. We oppose it.
There you go. Thank you, Allison Weir, so much. The book, Against Your Better Judgment. We'll be back after the break. With more for you here in the Power Hour. Stay with us.
Leading the way in providing our customers with only the best health, wellness, and readiness products. We have worked hand in hand helping to grow many small businesses, and we continue to provide exceptional customer service, educating our customers so they can make informed purchases. You can shop with confidence knowing that we have personally vetted every product that we offer. Your health and well-being means so much to us. We have championed voting with your dollars. And when you shop with the Power Mall, you are helping to keep ever so important and often censored health information in the forefront. Buy from the good guys. Shop thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. or call 877-817-9829.
Come to the Power Mall today and purchase Mediterranean Black Seed Oil from North American Urban Spice. Exclusively from the genetic source and never standardized. Cold pressed, it's so good. It supports cardiovascular, respiratory, immune, digestive, neurologic health, and so much more. Said to be good for everything but death itself. Come find the best prices on Black Seed capsules or 8-ounce varieties when you visit thepowermall.com or call 877-817-9829 to purchase.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2's skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Many Americans are growing increasingly concerned about the rapidly growing U.S. government deficits. Recognizing the additional printing of paper money devalues U.S. currency. To compensate, American gold and silver coins will provide wealth protection. U.S. Coin Capital provides physical gold and silver coins delivered directly to our clients. You can reach us at 1-800-878-2646, uscoincapital.com.
Hi everyone, this is Catherine, producer of the Power Hour. Not very many of you know that I suffer from an autoimmune disease, and one product that I depend on daily is Global Healing Center's organic plant-based selenium. Selenium is essential for optimal endocrine and immune function, and for moderating the inflammatory response. Not only that, but this essential trace mineral plays a vital role in promoting a healthy thyroid, maintaining cardiovascular health, and supporting metabolism. This expertly crafted supplement is extracted from the mustard seed plant. It is vegan-friendly and highly bioavailable, ensuring optimal absorption of this powerful antioxidant. So whether or not you're dealing with an autoimmune disorder like me, or you simply want to boost your immune function, I recommend you try Global Healing Center Selenium from the Power Mall. It's available by going to thepowermall.com or by calling 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829.
33 minutes after the hour of 12 noon where we are on this Thursday on the Power Hour. Dave Krieger with you. Thanks so much for calling this last hour. To all of our callers, valid questions, every single one of them, and we're still doing the research. I'm not going to quit. I actually am going to do her the honor of reading the rest of the footnotes and everything else I didn't get to when I read the book. There's another book out, too, right now, that talks about domestic enemies. Now, we talked about this as the last question that I asked of our author this last segment, and that is, what do you think is going to happen in America? What's going to happen to us? Because we put our faith in the wrong people and got money from people we should not be getting. Well, there's other people in here that have a different kind of influence. You know, I keep referring to what's going on here, you know, with this murder of Brian Malinowski in Little Rock. Yeah, they've set a May 23rd date. ATF, the jackbooted thug fascists, have to show up. Yeah, their leader, their director, has to show up and answer questions as to why they covered up the body camera and went into his house and murdered him in front of his wife, made it look like a home invasion, but no body cams, nothing. How'd they get away with that? This is another little mini Waco. See, is that part of our domestic enemies? That's what we want to talk about, because Daniel Greenfield has written a book by that name, Domestic Enemies, The Founding Fathers Fight Against the Left. Now, the left is America's oldest enemy, according to what investigative journalist Daniel Greenfield says. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you so much.
So they want to impose socialism. We just spent the whole last hour talking about Zionism. I don't know. I think that sometimes affects what's going on here. We're talking about elections, stolen elections, fake news, race riots, campus riots. I mean, this is all part of the bigger equation right now. They want to keep us divided. I mean, this is a plot by America's domestic enemies, is it not?
Absolutely. You know, they do this over and over again. They tear us apart. They pit us against each other. And we're not paying attention to the bigger picture, what's going on.
Okay. What is it? What is the bigger picture? Your take.
Oh, the bigger picture is the larger agenda of the left to fundamentally transform society, to take us from a place where we're individuals to prisoners of a state that has total and complete power over us. And this is really where domestic enemies begin. There was the American Revolution, which was all about returning power to the people, and the French Revolution, which was all about giving a state complete power over everybody. And with a promise, the American Revolution was going to let Americans pursue the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, whereas the French Revolution would impose the state's definition of happiness. And, you know, the WEF, all this stuff, still today, it's still the same basic idea. We're going to tell you how to live, and we're going to control every part of your life, and we're going to create crises that push you into that scenario.
Hegelian dialectic, basically. And we'll come up Indeed. With a solution, which is complete control. We'll just take you over. I mean, this book... I love the way that in the chapter by chapter sections of this thing, and folks, there's only six chapters in the book, okay? This is a good read. Now, there are a lot of endnotes, just like the other book I was talking about here on the show earlier. There's a note on historical accuracy. I mean, this is very well spelled out. I mean, this must be my day for investigative journalists coming on the show, because you're actually, with the endnotes, documenting virtually everything you talk about in these six chapters. But it all seems to, and there were people that were calling the show asking about like Zionism and its influence during Lincoln's time. But apparently there was a bigger problem as far as 1863, 1864, 1865, all in there, about Democrats and setting off America's worst race riots to steal an election. How'd that happen?
We kind of know very little about the draft riots. The draft riots were massive, and there was an original plan to have draft riots in major cities across America. The two big targets were New York and Chicago. And the idea was various leftists were going to seize control of these cities. They were going to declare their independence and create this new republic. And they were very aggressive about doing this. The riots are, you know, we call them riots, but these were really military engagements. There were snipers. There was artillery involved. It was a serious effort, and it was very much modeled on the European revolutions of the 1840s, which we don't really think about. But a lot of the radicalism in the United States, the leftist radicalism, came out of Europe all along, and the revolutions of the 1840s, which failed in Europe, brought all sorts of radicals to America who then tried to pull off some of these revolutions in the United States. They actually helped precipitate the Civil War, and they pushed America to crack up more and more. And this is something we see over and over again in history. We see this in the 20th century. All these European radicals come to America, and this is really part of the cycle of history that's been going on for around 200 years.
So, I mean, but this is communism, socialism, all that. I mean, communism on paper, mm-hmm. I took poli-sci. Communism on paper does not work. I mean, practice, it doesn't work. It looks good on paper, but it doesn't work in theory, in practice.
No, I mean, all this is academic stuff, but what works is you seize power, and that's the real goal there. Everything else is a bunch of lies.
So what's interesting here, I'm looking at chapter four, communist sex cults come to America. Now, I mean, this is just one of the ways that they have plied Americans into submission. is by going after their vices?
Yeah, so this was really even starts back in the 1820s. These European radicals come to America. They start setting up communes. People think of communes, something that was going on in the mid-20th century. It was all the way back in the 1820s. They set out to abolish private property in these communes, abolish marriage, abolish religion. And these are test beds for the new kind of society they want to create. These communes, of course, fail, but they then use the communes as the basis for trying to transform America because they go out into American politics. They get themselves elected to Congress, to local offices. They begin shaping what becomes the public school system, all based on these principles of collectivism. By the way, the people who live in these communes back then are called communists.
Ah, well, that's where it comes from. So the thing is, in Domestic Enemies, you talk about the true origins of the Democratic Party. I mean, apparently these are enemy agents that came over from Europe. Is that right?
So the French Revolution was the communist revolution of its day. It had these big ambitions, and they said they didn't just want to confine it to France. They wanted to spread it around the world, especially to America, where they had a lot of leftist allies and sympathizers. So one of their key figures, a man by the name of Citizen Genet, comes here. He tries to take down George Washington. He also helps set up these various little societies that are modeled on French Revolutionary societies. They're known as democratic societies. He's the one who suggests that they be called democratic societies, and that helps give its name to the Democratic Republican Party and then the Democratic Party. So really, the Democratic Party's own name goes back to a plan by the French Revolution to subvert the United States, to bring down Washington, and to impose this leftist revolution.
But the thing is that you've also alluded to the fact that we have had, because people took to arms, we actually have had an actual insurrections in America, not just the Civil War, but outside of that, there have been actual, besides Shays' Rebellion, there have been actual armed insurrections against our government, right?
Yeah, there have been. Some of these were actually set off by democratic societies, which I mentioned before, which had a plan to, you know, stage a French Revolution in America. Others, you know, in Chapter 1, they discuss what happens the first time there's a contested presidential election and people start challenging it. Different states actually start assembling their militias. They start collecting weapons. There is very nearly a civil war.
Wow. Now, 1800, they tried to steal an election. And they used the pandemic to do it?
Yeah, they used an outbreak of yellow fever, which at the time depopulated entire cities, including the nation's capital, then in Philadelphia. George Washington, everybody else has to evacuate, and they changed the way that the voting rules are conducted in response to that. And I was writing this in 2020, and it was just very timely because we had been dealing with this already 200 years ago.
Well, you're talking about that. I mean, history repeated itself. I mean, the left exploited a pandemic and set off race riots. We know about the summer of 2020. And the thing is while they made everybody else stay home, they're up in Minneapolis burning down police precincts, and nobody's wearing a mask, and everybody's not social distancing. I mean, it was like, all right, what doesn't make sense about all this? I mean, you took notice of that.
I did, and this is something that it was not a new idea for the Democrats. They'd done this before, and I realized that if people are afraid enough, they're just scared out of their minds, which they were back then, you could do just about anything. They're going to be willing to give you what you want, and they're going to say, trust the science, and they're not going to pay any further attention. And that was what actually happened in, again, the country's first contested presidential election.
Wow. So they seized, this is the thing about the Constitution that I find to be rather interesting, is that socialists seized power in Rhode Island and almost stopped the Constitution from being drafted. Is that right?
It is indeed. We think of the Constitution as every state actually got on board. It was actually messier than that, and it was one state, Rhode Island, that never got on board. They refused to send any delegates to the Constitutional Convention. They continued to boycott it, and they were flirting with making a deal with Great Britain. At one point, eventually, they are just forced to ratify the Constitution or remain outside it. But the underlying issue there was an organization called the Country Party, which had this dream of printing endless inflationary currency, paper money back then, which was controversial. And they did that in order to engage in a massive wealth transfer. So the Constitution would have prevented them from doing this. They refused to ratify the Constitution. Eventually, they're basically told either they ratify the Constitution or they're going to be brought into the United States by force.
Well, see, and the Constitution basically said, and it does empower the minting of coin, and it basically set a standard currency for the country, and they basically were going against it. That's my understanding.
Yeah. They wanted to do a massive wealth transfer to the people who were less well off. Their motto was to relieve the distressed. So they were not only printing money, but they were forcing businesses to accept it. They actually at one point had businesses swear an oath to accept the money, or they would lose their right to vote.
Okay, now let's advance this, since we're talking about domestic enemies here. Let's advance this up through today. What are we looking at as far as the people? We know about the squad. We know about them and what they're doing. What are the factions do we have to worry about here?
Well, they call themselves by different names, and the names are often a distraction. For example, everybody was using woke last year, and these days the only people using woke are conservatives, the people on the right. Nobody on the left uses woke anymore. They rename themselves, they're progressives, they're liberals. Bottom line is they're followers of a Marxist socialist ideology that believes that if they get total power, then they can fundamentally transform everything, that people are interchangeable, that only massive government power can bring about social justice, and everything else is really a detail. The things they claim they care about, like, let's say, abortion or gay marriage, they absolutely do not care about. You know, if you want evidence of that, look at how much gay marriage or abortion there was in the Soviet Union or in Cuba. They don't actually care about these things. What they care about is the idea that they can define how people should live and that people are completely interchangeable, that the only thing that matters is society. If they reshape society, they reshape everybody else. And their names change. They constantly rebrand themselves. One reason I wrote this is because we know almost nothing about the history of the left before the 20th century. And the reason we don't know that is because the left itself erases its own history. It wants to insist that it's this new idea. In fact, it's a very old idea.
Interesting. Sherry in Kansas, you're on the phone with Daniel Greenfield. Go ahead.
Yes, I don't agree with what the Democrats are doing, but he's given out some misinformation. The origin of the Republican Party was the 1848ers that came over because they were being kicked out of Europe trying to start revolutions over there. But that is the origin of the Republican Party. And the Constitutional Convention was not authorized. In fact, several people left because they didn't have instructions from their state legislators. All they had was instructions to revise the Articles of Confederation. This Constitution was a bunch of schemers that we call our founding fathers that are really opportunists. They had every right. They didn't send people because you just don't know your history.
Okay. I'm just, okay. Your response to that.
Sure. Well, they initially tried to modify the Articles of Confederation, but it wasn't working. One reason is that, yes, not everybody showed up, especially Rhode Island. At that point, they actually had to adopt a constitution because the Articles of Confederation had failed. The Democratic Republican Party was its own thing that was set up earlier on. The Democrats were the radical wing. The Republicans were the moderate one. Much later on, the Republican Party, as we know it today, was set up, but it had nothing to do with the Democratic Republican Party. They were just looking around for a name, and basically at some point they decided, why not go with the Republican Party?
Well, see, but the thing is here, Daniel, is we on this show refer to what we have here as a constitutional republic. Now, this people have taken the word democracy and just blown it out of proportion. And now that's part of their plan, isn't it? Confused.
It is part of their plan. But the idea of democracy was that you would actually have the right to vote. But for some people, especially radicals, the idea of democracy was you would have what was called then the leveling, which meant eliminating any distinctions between people. And it could mean wealth confiscation. It could mean various radical measures to equalize everybody, which is what we call DEI now. So for a lot of people, and if you look at Europe, that's still what it means in many cases. Democracy doesn't actually mean what it meant in ancient Greece. What it meant was mob rule, or it meant total social transformation. And that's still how Democrats use it today.
Interesting. You know, see, because this is the thing. I mean, Congress literally just kept Speaker Johnson in his seat, as it were, because yesterday they tried to oust him and it didn't work. I mean, they just cut Marjorie Taylor Greene off at the knees. I'm sure you were paying attention to that. But now, since they've stolen the election in 1800, now we move forward to 2020 and they use the pandemic to you know, fundamentally do the same thing. I mean, the Democrats ran somebody that was literally out of his mind, out of his basement. And, you know, I'm just wondering, with everything that you're seeing right now and doing investigative journalism as you are, where are we headed into November as we approach November? Where do you see this all going? What's our domestic enemy's real plan? What do you think they're going to do?
Well, we already see part of what they're doing. The trials are obviously one wing of it. Another element of it is the riots. There were always going to be riots. That's just the reality. If there hadn't been a war in Israel, there would be some other cause. We're already seeing violent environmental protests. There might have been abortion protests over Roe v. Wade. The thing is, there's always going to be, you know, one of the things I point out to people is that all the BLM riots, the big ones, they always happen in election year. For some reason, nobody gets shot on an off election year. So it's not a coincidence. There's always going to be riots and violence, because that also provides a pretext for either a crackdown or the sense of chaos where people just vote to maintain a system because they're terrified of anything else. So I think we are absolutely going to see riots. We're going to see the crackdown. Biden is incredibly unappealing. In poll after poll, people absolutely just hate him. And when I talk to people, you know, who are not remotely Republican or conservative, they really do not like him. So they're going to have to put all the stops to try to protect him.
Right, but the media is defending him, and the media is making it look like they're almost neck and neck with Trump, and we know that that's not true, and we've got the latest Rasmussen poll now saying 41% of Americans believe that we're going to be in a civil war within 5 years, maybe sooner. What's your take on all that? Is it just a poll we don't need to worry about, or you really see Americans getting that perturbed if they steal the election again that something might happen?
It's the election, but it's also bigger than that. You know, think about the bigger picture in American history and in, you know, current events. We do not agree on anything. There's half the country that really does not agree with half the other half of the country on anything, including on how to transfer power. If the election, if we view the elections as illegitimate, if we really do not agree on what kind of country we have, what are the basic principles of the country, what is right and wrong, we don't agree on any of those things. And at some point, yes, you will end up having to settle the discussion violently, and it gives me no pleasure to predict that at all, but I think everybody sees that this is indeed coming. We're fractured as a country in a way that goes beyond anything that had happened before. The Civil War was nothing compared to where we are now, because if you just break it down, there is really nothing that we agree on as a country, and if there's nothing we agree on as a country, how do we run it?
Well, see, and if they can keep us divided, which this seems to be the thing from the Uniparty, I mean, both sides now seem to be just looking for ways to get everybody angry with each other, to not talk to each other. I mean, this is the big divide and conquer principle, but I really feel that both parties are heavily involved in this. It's not just one-sided. What's your take?
Well, there are definitely elements of both parties involved in this, but I do still view this ultimately as a campaign by the left. We have all sorts of corrupt special interests in Congress. We have all sorts of corrupt special interests within the Republican Party in general. But the Republican Party's great sin is basically corruption. It's recklessness. It's a lack of any real commitment to anything. Most of these are people who just want to get through things. They want to cash in themselves. They want to go to the right cocktail parties. They have no real principles or commitment. The thing is, the other side does have principles and commitments, and that's what makes them dangerous. People who are simply corrupt, who will sell themselves out, well, we see their type everywhere. The people who actually want to accomplish something, they are the ones who are actually dangerous.
Okay, now what is the, because of the fact that everybody's got their idea of what might happen the closer we get to November, and you're talking about riots, I mean, are we talking about another pandemic They're talking about Disease Act. I mean, you write for frontpagemag.com and you are covering national, international events and high profile breaking news stories. I mean, certainly there must be some sort of talk or comment from the back channels and behind the scenes people you come in contact with and what their feelings are about what might happen or what stunt this government might pull, including martial law. The closer we get to November, you know, what would trigger such a thing?
I think we've seen the word J6 exactly what would trigger it. They just need a particular inciting event, and then they can militarize. You know, we kind of forget the surreal moment where Biden takes his oath of office and D.C. is under lockdown with massive numbers of federal troops. The idea that this can't happen again is fantasy. It absolutely can happen again. The question is, how far are they willing to go? How far are various political operatives ready to go? I think to some people in the establishment, they would actually be okay with Biden taking a hit because they can radicalize, they can push extreme violence even further, whereas they would not be able to do that as much under another term of Biden. So they lose, they actually ramp up the violence, we get 4 years of nonstop terror, and then they take power, and this time they take power with somebody who's a stronger figure than Joe Biden, I think is an entirely possible.
So given RFK Jr. could possibly water down Biden's votes, where does he stand in your viewpoint?
Well, they've been coming after him for a while. You know, we tend to see this over and over again. We've seen the usual accusations of Russian election interference targeting him and anybody who runs against Biden. I think they might actually try a trial or some sort of criminal charges.
Wow. Okay, Daniel Greenfield, the book Domestic Enemies, The Founding Fathers Fight Against the Left. You can get it by just going to our guest tab on thepowerhour.com. Thank you so much, sir, for joining us. Well, we are out of time for today's show, folks. In the meantime, we'll be back with a Friday edition tomorrow and 11 a.m. Central where we are. In the meantime, be nice. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Harmful organisms are everywhere affecting your health and well-being. Fortunately, there's a solution. Paratrex is a unique formula designed to help create an environment that's hostile to invading organisms. Made with a blend of herbs and other natural ingredients such as wormwood, which has often been used in traditional medicine as a dewormer. If unwanted organisms are affecting your health, Paratrex can help bring it all back in balance. Order today from thepowermill.com or call 877-817-9829. Are you tired of trying to figure out how to get all your fruits and vegetables into your busy lifestyle? OptiVita Complete Essentials provides you with 22 whole food vitamins and minerals, 29 fruits and vegetables, probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for ultimate health and nutrition. 30 individual packs, now less than $3 per day. Get your OptiVita Complete Essentials by calling 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the OptiVita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs. And my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.